Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 209 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, I'm going to be talking to Lisa and David from our weekend homestead, and we're going to be talking about soap making. Now, this conversation was plagued by a few technical difficulties, so hence the preamble, just to explain that we lost Lisa fairly quickly in our conversation. So we start off talking to Lisa and David together, and Lisa's audio just dropped out. So we made the decision to carry on with just David. But in case you're wondering why we're talking to David and Lisa, and then very quickly we're just talking to David, oh, that's the reason. And secondly, my audio in the upcoming conversation is also a little bit, well, I think comedically distorted. It sounds like just occasionally from time to time, like I've taken a bit of a breath from a helium balloon. I'm not sure what the issue is, but I think the conversation is fantastic and well worth sharing with you. And luckily, the main focus of this conversation, i.e. once we lost Lisa, unfortunately, was, David's conversation and his talking on the subject of soap making is all crystal clear. So hopefully, 99% of the upcoming recording is absolutely fine. It's just the odd bit of my voice, which is, as I say, comedically distorted. So hopefully it doesn't put you off too much. I hope you enjoy it. And without further ado, I will hand you over to my discussion with David and Lisa from our weekend homestead. Hi guys, thanks ever so much for joining me today, and we're here to talk about soap making. So welcome to the show, and why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourselves and how we came to be having this conversation today.
Sure. So a little bit about us. David and Lisa, our weekend homestead. We actually have been chasing after a slower lifestyle pretty much our whole lives. Gardening, homemaking, sustainability. It's always intrigued us. We kind of started out living in the country, and then life got busy and we ended up moving back to the city for work and long commutes and things, and raised some kids. And now we're back to what we loved and getting back to that slower life. And one of the things that we started doing was making soap, and that kind of started out from our daughter was diagnosed with PCOS, and that kind of got us on the path of searching out ways to help her. And the main thing was eliminating environmental toxins. And so
What is PCOS? It's not something I've heard before. Sorry.
Okay, it's polycystic ovarian syndrome. So what that does is it's kind of like a hormonal
Lost Lisa there for a second.
I think we
David,
have.
Are you still? would you mind picking up for a sec, David?
Sure. I don't know as much about the PCOS as Lisa does, but it sent us on a path of taking a look at everything that we had and looking at what was helping people and making it better for people who had gotten it. And so one of the things we realized is a lot of the things they talked about were the things in your home, like the soaps and cleansers and the things we all kind of take for granted. And so that kind of sent us on the path moving that direction and going, okay, what can we do? So, the first thing was it started to take a look at all the chemicals we had in our home, like taking everything out that's underneath the sinks and looking at it and going, okay, this isn't good. This isn't good. And finding replacements that worked. And I'd say 80 to 90% of what we were using before that time frame, we've been able to replace with more natural solutions.
Fantastic. And would you say that are all these things sort of
easy. I'm trying to work out how to phrase the question. What I mean is, obviously, we know how easy it is to go to the store and buy a tin of bleach or whatever it might be. But how much effort does it take, I suppose, is really where I'm coming from, to produce these things yourself?
Well, I think in the beginning, when we were really taking a look at it, I think it's a cultural shift. I don't think in general it's all that hard, but you have to tell yourself, hey, this is something that we want to do. And so the first thing we did is we didn't really change our habits, if you will, but we sought out products that we could still buy like you would anything else, except maybe we order them online instead of going into the store and buying them. And we just replaced a lot of the things in our home with, you know, different products that didn't have those harmful chemicals in there. So that became kind of the driving force on everything. And I think culturally, once you've kind of bought off on it and said, you know, hey, we can do this, then it's not so bad. I mean, we did, you know, we changed deodorants and things like that. And I think the biggest heartache was changing the deodorants. That was probably the hardest thing to get through, because seeing how your body reacts to the changes and detoxing your body is quite interesting.
And so you make all of your own soaps now, not just like the hard bars of soap, but everything that you kind of use on your body, do you?
Everything we use on our body, yes. We don't use a lot. I mean, we've cut it back. We don't make our own shampoos. Lisa's found a company that makes really good shampoo and conditioner. So we use it. Our daughter's now an adult. She uses it. But so we've really cut back on what we use. And I know some of the stuff that Lisa uses, as far as some of her daily routines, as far as moisturizer and stuff, she's making herself. So that's kind of where we ended up. And soap was probably the funnest, because it's one of those things you know, some of the stuff when you're looking at changing deodorants and things like that, it's more of a hassle and, hey, try this, it doesn't work. But when it came to doing the soap, we were just really looking forward to getting into it and going, hey, let's make soap. That sounds like a lot of fun. And then that's what started us on that path.
Great. So you started by, you know, having a bit of fun by making soap. And it was that, the sort of deeper level of learning a bit more about it.
Yeah. And I think when you take a look at soap, I mean, like, you know, we would go on holidays and take off for the weekend, and you go to these small towns and everybody's got homemade soap, and you think, oh, wow, this is really neat. You think, oh, I want to make soap. And then you start looking into it and you see that one of the biggest ingredients is lye. And so the first thing you go is, oh, I'm not going to mess around with lye. And so that was kind of the barrier to entry to starting to make the soap. And then, you know, I started watching some videos probably 4 or 5 years ago, and they really, you know, and I'm sure in an effort to limit their liabilities, really put an emphasis on how dangerous lye could be. So once we decided, hey, how can we protect ourselves against the lye? I mean, lots of people are doing it, and you go past that curtain, if you will, where you never look behind the curtain or drive through the smoke. Once you get through it, it's not that big a deal, as long as you respect it and you know, follow some of the basic safety protocols. It's really not that big a deal.
Yeah, well, for sure. When we spoke on the phone earlier, I mean, that was one of the things that you really wanted to get across in this chat, wasn't it? Demystify the idea that lie is this really scary thing that, you know, everybody should keep away from.
Yeah, and I go back to thinking as a kid when they had, you know, cartoons and they would show acid and somebody would get acid on their skin and it'd bore a hole right through their skin. It doesn't happen. I have got lye on my forearm once, and, you know, I've gotten battery acid on my skin before, and it usually takes about an hour before you realize there's an irritant on your skin. And I'd say with the lye, it's much faster, like within a minute or two. So once you know you've gotten it on your skin, you just go over and wash it off thoroughly, and it, you know, it doesn't cause any problems. I do think that, you know, keeping it out of the way of your kids and pets is an obvious necessity, and not getting it in your eyes or your mouth or anything like that. So I do use full wraparound goggles, and we do use gloves, and that's about the extent of it. And then we set it aside and just kind of respect it, and once we got past that, it's really not anything we're worried about. And when we release videos, a lot of the comments is, and even yesterday I was in a conversation with somebody, they're like, yeah, but what about the lie? And so I think that's probably the biggest barrier. And once you get past that, the soap making world can go a million different directions. And we've only gone down a few of them, but I mean, it can just take off and go from there.
So it's really easy for you guys to get in touch. Whatever it is you want to say, whether it's an idea for a future episode or perhaps you've got some feedback on something you've heard me say, I really do love hearing from you. There's lots of ways that you can do it. Now, you can follow the links in the show notes. You can use your phone just by pressing the button in the link and record a voice message that can be played on the show. Alternatively, you can send us an email where we are selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or you can find us via Facebook. But however you choose to do it, I really do love hearing from you guys. Perhaps you'd like to record a voice memo using the regular recording app on your phone and send that via an email. That's another way that I can play it on the show. But please do get in touch.
So, David, yeah, take me through it then. You know, I've got, like I said, I've got my lie, I've got my goat's milk. What am I doing? I'm a complete blank canvas.
Well, so the first thing is you got to find a soap base that you like. So I think that's probably the first thing you need to do. And I know for us, it took us probably about 3 or 4 batches. We found a really good tool online, and it's called soapcalc.net. And what it is, you know, we originally went out and got some books and started crawling through and reading about it. And there's a lot of good information in the books. But when you go to the online soap calculator, what it does is it has a list of all your oils, fats, and waxes. And so you can go through there and start selecting one. I mean, a lot of your oil-based soaps are, you know, olive oils, a lot of times one of your biggest carriers. So when you start plugging in, let's say olive oil, it starts to list out the qualities of the soap with the olive oil, and it breaks it down into several categories. So it breaks it down into hardness, cleansing, conditioning, bubbling, the creaminess, the iodine, and the INS.
Wow.
And so when you put that in there and you put the amount that you want, it gives you the percentage of water and lye that you're going to need. And then you put in the amount of fragrance you want. Maybe you don't even want to look at fragrance in the beginning. Maybe you just want to figure out how to get a decent soap base or throw just a little bit of, you know, scent inside there. And then you start going, okay, well, you know, with olive oil, the hardness isn't really good. And the cleansing is zero. And the conditioning is great. And the iodine is great. So now you need to start filling in the blanks in the different categories. So then you got to go to a hard oil like coconut and or shea. And in our particular formula today, we use both. So then when you add that, it shows you the individual characteristics of each individual oil, plus the total of the recipe that you're building. And so they also give you a range. So it's not like they leave you hanging and they tell you, you know, like on hardness, you want to range between 29 and 54. And on the recipe that we do today, we sit at about a 40. And so you start tweaking it, and then you can go through your books or going, hey, you know, what we did is we looked at a lot of the homemade soap we had bought elsewhere. And, you know, there were some common players in all of them, but they all kind of had their own take on how they were filling out those blanks in the different ingredients. So I've never used goat milk in our soap, and I'm curious to see how it turns out for you. Last week, we replenished our herd and got a couple of Nubian goats. And I don't know that milking them today is in our short-term goals, but it is curious to me to see how it is. But once you start putting those things in there, like in our specific recipe, today we're using olive oil, coconut oil, avocado oil, shea butter, and a little bit of castor. And that seems to give us a formula that we've really, really liked. And so your first batch will be good, and you'll be excited. And then, you know, after you've got through the first couple bars, you'll be like, man, this soap would be better if it cleansed better or it conditioned my skin better. And you start putting it all together. And then, you know, on that list of characteristics, the two things that I never really paid attention to was iodine and INS. And so, you know, iodine is a powerful and natural antiseptic. And so once we figured that out, we looked at our recipe. We're like, hey, you know, we're right where we need to be. And then INS is a characteristic that people used for a long time back, you know, and people still use it today, but they did it back in the 80s. And basically it was a combination of the iodine and the soapification value. And the higher the INS, the harder the soap will be. So once you get your oils figured out and you get your lye mixture figured out and you pour the two of them together, that then starts the saponification process. And so that's where the lye starts to interact with the oils and it starts to actually harden the soap. And that's part of the cold press soap making. And, you know, when you talk about it, we talked about the lye. When you take the water and you got one of the safety things on water and lye is you want to add your lye to the water. You never want to add the water to the lye. You know, we can start with 80 degree water Fahrenheit and it'll get up to 180, which is like 82 Celsius. And, wow. And it raises in Fahrenheit by 100 degrees. So,
yeah.
So once your oils are mixed, you know, and you combine the two, you know, we take our oils and, you know, because we're using coconut oil and shea butter, they're more of a solid oil. So we put them on the stove and we heat them real slowly until they get to about 90, 95 degrees. We mixed our lye in the beginning because it got all the way up to 180. And so we had to allow them to stabilize and come down to where they're, you know, within about 5 to 10 degrees of one another. And we're typically trying to mix the oils at 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees Celsius. And go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, it's very considerate of you. And I genuinely appreciate that you've got the Celsius ready for me there. It makes a huge difference. So thank you very much.
Well, I have the same problem when we're talking to people and they're all Celsius and I'm like, oh, you got to help me there.
No, so, that's brilliant.
So 38 degrees Celsius is where you want to mix the lye solution and you want to mix the oil solution. And what happens is after you mix it, so all you've done is you've put those things in, you mix them together. It takes roughly on our recipe, and we've tweaked our amount of water and lye over time, but it takes about 2 to 3 minutes before the soap goes to trace. And what that means is, you know, you take an emulsion blender and you put it in that mix and you start mixing it up. And about every 15, 20 seconds, you know, turn it off and you see what the soap's doing. And if it still looks like, you know, a liquid, it hasn't gone to trace yet. Well, you keep checking it. And after a few minutes, what happens is it starts to get hardened and you can see that the material is starting to stick to the side of the emulsion blender. And your goal is it to be like a cake batter substance.
Yeah.
And then once it's there, you put in your exfoliants and you put in your scents or your fragrances after it's gone to trace. And what that does is that preserves the scents inside there and suspends it inside that material after the first chemical reaction has taken place.
Sure. So we're going to go, if you don't mind, go back quite a few steps now and sure. Probably go through it all again. But so going right back to the website you mentioned, soapcalc.net,
yes.
Which thank you for that. I shall definitely be going on there. You list of characteristics, the list that included iodine and some other things. I wonder if you could just quickly just run through that list and tell us what they actually mean. I know some of them will seem really obvious and some of them probably are, but just a really cursory description of each item on that list, I think might be helpful if you don't mind.
Sure. So the different components you're looking for when you're putting the recipe together is hardness, cleansing, conditioning, bubbling, creamy, iodine, and INS. And in the beginning, we focused on the first five. So the first one being hardness is basically how hard the soap will get, you know, after it's done its curing process.
The actual bar itself.
The actual bar itself. So in our first few batches of soap, our hardness number was a little bit lower. And what we noticed is that it tended to disintegrate, if you will, or we were going through the bar much quicker with a lower hardness right. number. And right. so in our case, we added shea butter, and it was the shea butter that brought the hardness value up. And by doing so, now the bar is harder. And, you know, when I say hard, I don't mean it's like super hard. It just brought the whole hardness up so it doesn't dissolve quite as fast.
Yeah, yeah.
On the cleansing side of things, you know, cleansing is how much properties does it have to actually remove the dirt and grime from your, you know, from your hands or your body itself. When we used to use commercially bought soap, I don't know where their cleansing was, but I always noticed that my skin in the winter times was drier. And sure. I think it has to do between keeping track of the cleansing quality and the conditioning quality. I think those two probably go hand in hand in some level. What I've noticed is in the different oils or the ingredients that you choose, one is either really good with conditioning and not at cleansing, and the other one is really good at cleansing and not in conditioning, or like vice versa for one another. So like as an example, olive oil has great conditioning value, but coconut oil has almost none, you know, and avocado oil has good conditioning and no cleansing, and shea butter has good conditioning and no cleansing. And so really, when we look at the cleansing side of things in my recipe, as we sit here, the only thing that's really pulling any cleansing is the coconut oil. Yeah. Conditioning, I think, is probably has a lot to do with how it feels on your skin and how it leaves your skin. And the same thing kind of applies to different recipes, you know, or the different oils in your recipes changes that value. Bubbly, you know, how much bubble does it have? I don't feel our formula has a lot of bubble. We can get some lather out of it, but it's not, you know, a ton. And on yep. on the scale that Soap Calc uses, you know, they're looking for a bubbly level between 14 and 46, and our recipe sits at about 25. So we get a fair amount of lather without it being overwhelming. And yep. then the creamy factor has a lot to do with how that soap feels from you when you're using it. So, you know, like what it feels on your skin after you've used it. You know, I think you have the conditioning that, you know, does leave some long-term effects, but I think the creaminess of it is how does it actually feel when you're rubbing it in and out of your hands. Yeah. I think for me specifically, up until recently, the two things I took for granted or the two characteristics was iodine and the INS. And what's interesting is, you know, after figuring out what the iodine was, and I always saw that our soap was in a good range there, so I never really gave it a whole lot of thought. You know, a lot of people, like, we don't look at iodine, but the more we read about it, it just seems like it's a really good antiseptic to have laying around. And so that gives you the characteristics within your soap as well. And I've noticed that a lot of the oils in general in the recipe that we have, iodine's in pretty much all of them, except for, let's say, coconut oil. There's not much there.
Right.
And then the INS factor, you know, INS is a combination of the iodine and basically the overall scale of how the soap hardened after the saponification process.
Yeah.
And, you know, they show a range there. You want to be between 136 and 165. Our recipe sits at 151. So, you know, we were right in the middle of the range. The more reading I've done recently is that a lot of people consider the perfect bar of hard soap to be 160. So, right. you know, so in the back of my mind, I'm like, hey, I really like our soap. But, you know, as more I think about it, look at it, I think, you know, maybe someday, maybe I'll try to get a little closer to 160 and see what that soap feels like and how we like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's so many options, isn't there? You could go on forever.
Well, there is. And, you know, like I said, the first, you know, the first couple bars we did, or the first batches, we did the individual bars when we were doing the soap. And, you know, Lisa was a big advocate of, hey, if we're going to make our own soap and we're going to take the time, let's just use all organic oils. You know, there's no reason not to. We're not doing anything with it. So we chose to go down that path. And, you know, she's like, well, let's come up with some man sense. And so we started trying to come up with these bars. So we bought silicone molds because, I mean, after you put it all in, you have to mold it.
Yeah.
And what I noticed is they worked out great and the bars looked okay. But the more I dug into it, we became a bigger fan of building soap loafs. I believe they're easier to manage as you're making them. You can adapt the size of the bar that you like. You know, I'm sure we could go out and buy a bunch of different silicone molds and find a bar we like. But when you make your own loaf, you can adjust the size of the soap box that you make. And then you can fill it at different rates to get the size that you want that fits in your hand.
So by a loaf, you mean, you know, a huge block rather than... So I'm just trying to describe this in an... It's a visual thing. I'm trying to describe it for our listeners. I'm guessing, you know, the soap molds that you're talking about, think like ice cubes versus... the you know, a loaf being a much bigger block that you would then slice to size later. Does that sound right? Is that what you're describing?
Correct. And then
yeah,
if you end up making your own, I mean, there's a lot of them when you look online for sale. Like, we typically are making 3-pound batches, and I think we're probably going to start increasing that. But we typically make a 3-pound batch, and our loaf size is roughly, I'm going from memory, the internal dimension of the loaf is probably 12 inches long and 3.5 inches wide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to try to convert that for you. So
no, that's like, I can do that. Well, it's 30 centimeters by how wide did you say?
About 3.5 inches.
Yeah. So 30 centimeters by about 8 centimeters, something like that.
And then what we do is we adjust the amount of material that we put into it to do the other dimension. So
yeah,
the first ones we made were too big to hold in our hand, so we had to use a little less material in order to change that dimension. After you make your loaves of soap, you, after 24 hours, you cut them, and they're really soft and malleable at, you know, 24 hours after you mix the soap together. And so it's still, you can't use it as soap after you've done all this. You cut it up, and then you put it on a, you know, we put it on a baking sheet, you know, the ones like a baking rack where it has wire.
Yeah.
And we space it out, and you let your soap age or cure. And what happens is the moisture starts to come out of it. And, you know, I've heard people say 4 weeks, 6 weeks. We ran out of soap one time. So you kind of have to plan your soap making in advance. If you're down to your last bar, you're probably behind the curve.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I've grabbed soap at 3 weeks, and ideally I think 6 weeks is probably good. But then once you hit that 6-week mark with your soap, you're going to want to put it in an airproof container because it'll continue to dry out. And as it dries out, you'll start losing some of your fragrance. And it'll just get harder and harder and harder.
Yeah. Yeah. So just keep it airtight from that point onwards.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not, you know, like we've done things where we, you know, wrap them in parchment paper and put them in a Ziploc bag. You know, Lisa and I've talked a lot about, hey, let's, you know, put them in plastic. And, you know, we don't keep a lot of Ziplocs around anymore. So, you know, we're trying to reuse containers and wrap it in the parchment paper. But the downside is the parchment paper, the tapes don't stick to it very well. And so wrap them up and then stack them inside of an airtight container or, you know, anything you can keep it from, you know, letting that air get to it.
So I just want to take a moment and say thank you. Thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate every single one of you who downloads and listens to the show. There's lots of ways that you can help the show grow and support it. And probably one of the best ones is just to share it with someone. Find someone who you think might be interested in this content and say, listen, here's a show that I like. I think you might like it too, and point them in our direction. We would be forever grateful. If you want to go a step further, you could also become a patron. You can do that by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub and set up to donate a small monthly amount. If you think this podcast is worth the price of a cup of coffee a month, then you can set it at that amount. And obviously, anyone who chooses to do that, we are eternally grateful to.
So the actual soap making process itself, when you're in the kitchen, what sort of equipment are you actually using? What have you got out? I mean, you've mentioned that you wear some gloves and stuff, but other than that, I mean, is it just one bowl, you know, any type of bowl, or is there some specialist equipment we might need?
We basically have our own pot that we use for heating the oil. And then we have a smaller pot that we use for mixing the lye. And then we have the soap box or the soap molds, whichever direction you choose to go. And then we have the immersion blender. The immersion blender is a must, I think, with the soap making. I'm sure there are people out there that say, oh, you don't need one. But when you're mixing those things together, it happens really, really quickly. And it needs to be a thorough mix. And then once it's gone to trace and you start adding the exfoliants and the fragrance, there's been times where it seems like it's going so quickly where I don't know that the immersion blender's going to get it all mixed up. So without the blender, I think it could be kind of hectic.
Yeah. Yeah. So could you build a soap with us just now? You know, exactly. It doesn't have to be anything technical or difficult, but if someone wanted to get started, a really, really simple soap recipe, where would you suggest they start?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing I would do is you obviously you have all your oils there sitting aside, but you got to know what oils you need. For the oils,
this is what I was going to say. Yeah, give us an actual recipe. You know, a simple one
for the oils, and I'll have to give it to you in ounces, and the ounces come in weight. Oh, yep. And when you talked about the other materials that you do need a digital scale that allows you to tear. So.
Yeah.
So once we have that, we take our pot and we put it on the scale and we tear out the scale. And if let's say we're going to build like call it a 45 ounce or almost a 3 pound, you know, loaf, I would use 14.8 ounces of olive oil.
Yeah.
13.5 ounces of coconut oil. And coconut oil comes in different degrees. I think they have a 76, which is what we use. I think they have a 92 or a 96. Up top of my head, I don't know what it is.
What do those numbers refer to?
I think it's the melting point for them.
Okay.
So obviously, if you're looking to make soap a little bit harder, my assumption is, and I haven't tried it, if you go to the higher degree one, it probably would achieve that for you. Right. Avocado oil, 7.6 ounces. Then we would add some shea butter at 6.7 ounces and then some castor oil at 2.3 ounces. The deal with the castor oil is it really helps hold your lather, if you will. So when you start making bubbles, it does a really good job with that. But if you overdo it with the castor oil, it tends to get a little bit sticky.
Right.
So every time we add a new oil, we would re-tear our scale. And then that way you basically start at zero when you're adding the next ones.
Yeah.
And then I would put it on the stove at a really low heat. And the only reason we don't go with a high heat is because we really don't want to see it get over 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees Celsius.
Yep. What happens if the temperature gets up there?
You're going to have to wait longer for the temperature to come back down.
Right.
The warmer. So again, when we mix the lye and we mix the oils together, they need to be as close to the same temperature as possible. And the higher that temperature is, let's say you mix the lye solution and the oil solution at, I don't know, call it 130 degrees or 55 degrees Celsius. Your saponification process or the chemical reaction that happens would happen a lot quicker. And right. So it may happen so fast that you might not be able to get it all mixed and then get your fragrance in after you go to trace.
Got you. So what's the perfect temperature for doing the mix?
I like between 90 and 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right. So quite cool.
Yeah, quite cool. So when you put that, you know, oil mix on the stove and you mix it together, you know, it takes about 5 to 10 minutes on a really low heat, but you can usually get them all blended together and they're sitting, you know, right at about that 100 degrees or 38 degrees Celsius. It's right there. Before I mix the oils together, I typically make my lye mixture first. And the reason I do that is I can start with, you know, room temperature or lukewarm water. And after making that lye solution, you know, you're mixing it for 3 minutes. What I typically do, again, always put the lye into the water because now you control the chemical reaction. So it goes a lot slower. After we've mixed it for 3 to 5 minutes, that water is 180 degrees Fahrenheit or 82 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. And what amount of water and lye?
On the recipe that I gave you, I would probably do 12.5 ounces of water.
Yeah.
And 6.3 ounces of lye.
Okay. So at this point, we've got two separate mixes going on. We've got our water and lye, and then we've got our oils.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so start with the lye solution because it's going to take longer to cool down to that, you know, 100 degrees Fahrenheit or the 38 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
Then mix your oils together. And then before you get ahead of yourself and start mixing the two together and start that whole saponification process, you're going to want to measure out any exfoliants that you use or your fragrance. The fragrance weight for this specific recipe is about 1.4 ounces.
Yeah. And that could be anything.
And that can be anything. So,
okay. What sort of things are you enjoying at the moment?
We like a lot of citrus. And then recently, been kind of hooked on peppermint. So the soap that's been our go-to recently has been peppermint and rosemary.
Nice.
So the exfoliants are one of those things too, where, you know, they can add color. I was looking at some benefits of different ones. We've done a lot of coffee. One of the problems with coffee, if you use, you know, new coffee, you know, like you take a coffee bean and blend it and put it in there, it'll change the color of your soap.
Yeah.
But it'll also add a different characteristic to it, which I haven't tried. So we use spent coffee when we use coffee. The other thing to remember is any of the exfoliants that you put in there, you know, we use a coffee grinder to get them to size, but you want them very, very, very fine. The first few batches we did where we were putting coffee in, we were using spent coffee grinds and it was like sandpaper. So,
right.
So we learned to grind it up.
Yeah, that's going to raise your cleansing number, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because you would hand it to friends and family and they're like, well, what do you think? And they're like, oh, it's good.
It's a bit sharp, but it's good.
Yeah.
Excellent. So all mixed together. What's next? Yep.
So we mixed it all together. We waited for it to go to trace. And then, you know, put your fragrance and your exfoliants in there. And then right away, you want to get it into your soap molds. If you're putting it in like a loaf mold, it takes a little bit more care because you want to put it in layers and make sure, you know, maybe tap the box on your countertop so that it fills all the voids.
Yeah.
Some of the soap molds you can get with silicone liners. On the ones we've been using recently, we've been lining them with parchment paper. Yeah. And you set it inside there. And what we do is I put cardboard over the top of the soap mold so that, you know, nothing can get into the top of the soap. And then we wrap it up tightly in towels. And the reason we do that is we want it to retain the heat. So after we've mixed it and we've created that soap loaf, you know, we mix the two, you know, ingredients together at, you know, 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees Celsius. A few hours later, you know, you're not supposed to disturb it for 24 hours, but I'm always looking at it at the 6 to 8 hour mark.
Okay.
It's usually gone up to about 130 degrees Fahrenheit or 55 degrees Celsius.
Right.
So a lot of it has to do with how successful that saponification process has been, but that's the actual chemical reaction of how you're making soap.
So you actually want that temperature rise.
You want that temperature to rise and you want to hold it there for as long as possible.
Right.
So once we started making soaps and loaves, we started noticing that the characteristic of the soap changed. And I think it has to do with the amount of heat that it goes through during that process is a lot greater than it is in individual bars.
Yeah. 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 That makes sense. And then, and that's it. And then we're done. You just leave it for however long, 6 weeks or more, and then cut it up. Is it really easy to slice at 6 weeks just with a knife, or is there a technique?
No, what you want to do is 24 hours after you mixed it together.
Oh, 24 hours. You said that. Sorry.
Yeah. You pull it out and then you slice it up.
And then, is that just with a knife?
Just with a knife.
Yeah.
I use a speed square. And I go through them because I did an even 12-inch long loaf. I can go through and make 1-inch bars and I score it with my speed square.
Yeah.
And then you just go through with a knife and just cut it straight down. And because it's still really malleable after 24 hours, you can go in there and kind of clean up the edges.
But is it soft enough to kind of tap it out of your mold quite easily?
Yeah, you can take like my mold. I made a slide on the bottom so that, you know, it goes all the way through. Most of your boxes, you're going to want to have a way so that the soap can go all the way through. Once you pull the bottom out of the box, a lot of times it'll just fall right out.
Right.
Because remember, it started to shrink.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And then we just leave it to cure for a few weeks. It sounds nice and simple. I'm looking forward to it already.
Yeah. So what'll happen is you'll make a batch and then in about 1 week, you're going to be looking at that soap that you got sitting in your pantry.
Yeah.
And you're going to go, what could it hurt? And you're going to grab a bar and you're going to use it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
And then you're going to be like, oh, I should have waited a little bit longer. I'll wait 6 weeks. And then about the 3 week mark, you're going to go in there and grab another bar.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the beauty of making your own soap and with being able to do it without, you know, really having an investment of a lot of specialty tools or anything. You can go in and make changes and play with it. And, you know, maybe you prefer your soap a week old. You know, there's no hard, fast rules that says, you know, it's going to harm you or anything like that. It's just a matter of, you know, what most people perceive as being the right way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And how long the actual bar will last, I suppose.
Yeah, and I would say, like with ours, I would say we probably get about 10 days on a bar of soap.
Yeah. Nice. So before we sort of start wrapping up, is there anything that you feel that we might have missed that you think we should cover, Dave, or you think we've hit everything?
I think we're good. I'd like my wife to yell down the hall and tell me if I missed something she wanted to cover.
Sure. So just for our listeners, we've had a bit of a technical problem and Lisa, she dropped out. You obviously have noticed that, but she couldn't get back on. So, David, who's just, they're just in separate rooms. David's just going to give her a shout and check she's happy, see if we've missed anything.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything from her side of the house, so I think we're okay.
Okay. So, well, why don't you let people know where they can find you, David, if they want to come and check you out?
We have our YouTube channel, which is Our Week in Homestead.
Yeah.
And then Facebook, Our Week in Homestead, Instagram. And then we have a website that we've just started putting together, which is ourweekinhomestead.com.
Awesome.
And so, you know, we're doing lots of things other than just soap, but we're, you know, doing all things kind of holding on to that lifestyle. And I think kind of how our paths crossed is looking at, you know, similar things that we're all interested in. So
Absolutely. It's,
The whole thought is, did we meet in a bar? But we actually met on, you know, YouTube, looking at similar things and listening to what you do. It's, you know, it's been a great experience going through and checking out all the different people and coming up with different ideas. I think it's great that everybody has a common interest in mind. And as the more we talk and, you know, spread out and listen to podcasts and look at each other's videos, it kind of broadens our own horizons. So it's been a great adventure.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for your time today, David. And please do thank Lisa for me as well. And hopefully we'll stay in touch.
You bet. Let me know how that goat's milk soap goes. I'm really keen to see how it is.
I 100% will. But I'll actually, I'll make a video of me doing it for my YouTube channel, and I'll send you a link.
Okay. Sounds great.
Great. Thanks, David.
All right. Stay thank well. You. All right.
Bye.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.